That's right. We are back once again for the 129th installment of the Parish of the Patriots. Time is flying by because we're having so much fun. Glad you could join us this week. As always, we're looking to have a thought-provoking and interesting discussion. If you're unfamiliar with our format here, there will be a Christian-specific segment later on in the show. Advise you to stick around for it. You don't have to worry about sitting in the back of the pews, you know, because like people go to church and they're like always sit in the back of the pew because they don't feel exactly comfortable. You always, it's like a ranking in churches. You know, you go in the church and you got the front row sitters. They want everybody to see them up there on the front row. And you got the people kind of in the middle. They just kind of fall in there like a scale. And then you got those people at the very back. And they're like back there. Don't even want nobody to notice them. They just kind of slipped in. Pew. Sit back there. Sit back there in the back. Even if it's like there's five whole rows open in front of them, they still sitting back. Sit back there in the back. Well, here at the Parish of the Patriots, don't worry. You're all sitting. We're all sitting. Hell, I'm leading the congregation and I'm in the back as well. I'm back there with you. We're all in the back pews because we're all here on our online parish. It is, but you don't want to miss it. Getting back on point, that pattern, we just follow it here. We get off point, reel it back in. It is something if you haven't been around here before, I think it's something you'll get something out of, especially if you're a Christian believer, but even some non-believers say they enjoy it. So, hey, whatever floats your boat. Like I said, it's 129th installment. This show is financially supported. Yes, we have to plug for our tithes. This show is financially supported by you, the listeners. We've got snail mail. We got Bitcoin. We got Monero. We got our email. All that's at the bottom of the description page, which I don't think anybody reads. So I have to tell you, it's at the bottom of the description page. And, if you have a weirdo cryptocurrency, drop me an email. I'll do my best to get you a email address for that. Happens from time to time. You know, somebody says I've got, I don't know, fill in the blank weird coin. Do my best to get you an address for that. And of course, we like to kick right off with the listener supporter mailbag and, you know, just stay up. Because at some point, it'll just morph from the listener supporter mailbag. We're just segueing right into the regular show. And you're going to miss it. You're not even going to realize the transition because we just keep on rocking. So here we go, GPD. This from Mr. T, one of our weekly supporters here. What is your earliest childhood memory? It's amazing how we humans retain them. Well, you know, I can actually remember this. Gets me thinking. I actually can remember like being in my crib. I can remember trying to grasp language. I mean, these are just snippets. I don't like have a vivid memory of the whole thing, but I can remember, you know, tidbits, snippets. That's what I keep trying to say. I can remember snippets of trying to grasp language and trying to convey. And it was like, you got these emotions and you're just mimicking these sounds to attach to these emotions. And it's like the next thing you know, you can talk. I find this amazing. There's another part. As a Christian believer, this is another thing I find amazing about God's creation. Because if you as an adult have ever tried to learn a foreign language, it's like the hardest thing in the world. It makes no sense. Some people are pretty good at it. I'm horrible at it. I mean, I've watched enough Korean and Japanese shows in their languages that I should be fluent in both of those languages. I should be able to sit here and just rattle whatever off. Instead, I might can ask for another bottle of soju or whatever you call it, you know, from the Ajuma running the cafe, or I could confess my love to the student council president. Beyond that, I can't really speak it. I get words, tidbits, snippets here and there. That's it. It's hard. But yeah, you take a child waddling around 2-3 years old, whatever the case may be, maybe younger, and they don't know nothing. They can't eat. They still have to have their diapers changed. They don't understand the concept of using the toilet. And yet, poof, they understand the language. And they say that, you know, English, for instance, as they say, is one of the hardest languages to learn. But it doesn't matter. I mean, you look at somebody who speaks a foreign language, whatever that may be, and you may look at it and be like, man, that must be a really hard language. You know, how do people speak that? Because it just sounds like gibberish to you. And yet they learn it. A little bit of kids run around 3, 4, 5 years old. They just blah, 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 rattle it right off. It's an amazing thing about the creation. As a child, it's like you have this pre-programmed setting to learn language. They're pre-programmed setting so that when you hit a certain stage, you're a child, you're already grown up, your child, that brain starts taking it in and that setting kicks in. And once that's imprinted, that's your language. So as you become an adult, you don't have that anymore. The function has a one-time use. It's like it has a one-time use. And once it's used, it gets turned off. And then you become an adult and you're like, man, I want to learn to speak this language. And you start trying to learn it and it's all confusing and it's hard. And you're reading books and you're listening to video. You're watching videos. You're listening to audio teachings. It's impossible. I think it's because in your brain, you start trying to translate everything. Because like when you're a child and you're learning language, you're just attaching these sounds to convey an emotion. Oh, I feel this emotion. Oh, I want my bottle. So if I make the sounds for that, they'll understand that that's what I want. And then they'll bring it to me. You're not sitting there. You don't have anything to compare it to. But when you're an adult trying to learn language, you're trying to compare it. Okay, these words in English mean this. So I have to say them like this, but they're structured in a different way. It all gets confusing. The point is, I think it's a really amazing thing. I think it's an amazing thing the way that the Lord has designed. It's all part of the design. Little child can't even wipe their ass, but they can learn a language. Poof! Without like any effort. Amazing. Grandpa Dan, when you talked about giving to your own brethren, which I totally agree, I have family that give all their money to their God, the Jews. They told me that I have to for God to bless me and the country. I laughed and told them I don't believe that. And if that were true, wouldn't we get better instead of worse? It's like the more money we give to Israel or Africa, the worse our country gets. And that's from Debbie. It is amazing. That's part of the false Judeo-Christian teachings that the MCC is pretty much infested with now. Our Judeo-Christian values. It makes absolutely no sense. But it's part of the heresies. Part of the founding doctrines is we have to bless. We have to bless. We have to bless this modern nation state. I mean, and bless means send them more money. And God's going to bless us. And you're right. Let's look at actual results because God is truth. And if they're teaching a true teaching, you say, you can look at heresies and false teachings by results. I think about when God was instructing people in the Old Testament, he said, the people were instructed, they said, well, you'll know if it's a false prophet or not. Because if the guy comes to you and says, well, God says A, B, and C is going to happen. And if A, B, and C happens, then he's a true prophet. If A, B, and C doesn't happen, he pulled that out of his ass and he should be put to death because he's a false prophet. There was a high toll to be paid for talking out your ass and claiming that the Lord said it. Results. Is it a true teaching or is it a false teaching? It's not hard. You look at the results. They say the modern nation state of Israel, these so-called Jews, they're the Old Testament. They're Abraham reincarnate. And if you want to be blessed, America, you need to send your dollars and fight your wars for these people. But if that were a true teaching, we've done enough of it. We've got a long enough track record. I don't know how far back you want to go. We overlooked that whole USS Liberty thing. I don't know how many wars and conflicts we've got in. Who knows how many trillions of dollars over the years have been sent to this little country over here. I'm pretty sure we should be seeing some results now. I mean, we should be pretty much utopia right now. If it's a tit for tat, maybe that's it. Maybe it's not 50-50. Like if you give $20 million to Israel, God's going to bless you $20 million worth of blessing. Maybe it's like if you send $20 million of blessing to Israel, God's going to bless you with 48 cents. Maybe that's it. God's being imbalanced. No, it's a false teaching. I don't know how anybody falls for this shit just based on results. Well, we got to give them more money. We got to bless Israel more. Because if we do that, then for sure, what is God like holding out on us? No, it deserves mockery. It deserves mockery because it's a false teaching. We don't have to be polite. We don't have to be polite when people are teaching a false teaching to take advantage of people that mean well. That deserves mockery. It deserves our scorn. Oh, we'll just send some more blood and treasure for this country over here for reasons. It's all very tiresome. Results. What are the results? If it's a true doctrine, then we should be blessed to death here. But yeah, we're not seeing those results. So I think it's a false teaching. A false prophet would be getting drug out in the street and stoned if this were the Old Testament. This was the Old Testament days. Thank you, Debbie. And finally, this is from Chap. Grandpa Dan, lately I've been hearing that America is on a slippery slope towards communism because Americans have been taught to hate the country. I do not know about you, but I straddle the fence on this foregoing contention. Supposedly Americans were taught to hate the country. If that's the case, it stands to reason that they would not have been enlisting in the military over the years or supporting it. For that matter, I don't espouse communism or Marxism. However, I cannot bring myself to love a country that works against my best interests. Forgive me if the following comes across as daft, but would not a healthy disdain and distrust harbored by a nation's citizenry towards its nation be a benefit? Now, this claim, and you'll see this in normie circles, usually among the same circles, like in comment sections under a news article. It'll be the same people that will sit here and talk about. I saw a video post up the other day, and it was Joe Biden. It was a YouTube video, and it was a clip of Joe Biden running up to the media. I think he was on an airport runway somewhere, and the media is hollering these questions about immigration, blah, blah, blah. And he dodders up to him with that blank look on his face, and he says, "I wipe my butt." This is totally a serious country. Anyway, and everybody's making fun of it in the YouTube comments. And like the number three comment was somebody going, "This won't be funny when we're all speaking Chinese." Usually it's the same people will sit here and make this claim. The problem is people just hate America. They've been taught to hate America and them evil chinks. They're trying to take us all over. They miss the point. I don't know if it's because there's so much like misdirection in conservative circles, because conservatism as a system. I always try to differentiate between people that are like normal run-of-the-mill people you run into. They say I'm a conservative. They just mean they're not part of, they don't support the agenda of global homo. I'm not insulting those people. I'm talking about conservatism as a dogma. The entire purpose of it is misdirection. You see, when somebody says, "Well, the problem is people hate America," you say, "Yeah, people hate America." What this tells you is several things. One, it tells you that, like conservatism in general, it is bought into this great lie that America is an idea. America is the poem written on the Statue of Liberty. America is the poem on the Statue of Liberty. America's idea. See, they've already ceded that ground to their supposed opposition. They don't ever fight over terms. They just take up the terms of their opposition and adopt those. You see, the problem is not that people were taught to hate America. That's not the problem. That is, in fact, is completely to miss the point. And it's just so glaring in your face. The problem is white people were taught to hate themselves. You can see why this runs into the face of the lie that America's an idea. See, they take the idea a nation is the people. They've bought into the melting pot lie. They've bought into the we're an idea lie. They bought into the we're these poem on the Statue of Liberty lie. And so since they've bought into that, they just substitute race for America. But what is America? Is it just the landmass? Is it my constitution? What is it? No, it's an abstract concept in itself. I mean, what makes up America today? Can anybody tell me? Aside from, I don't know, nonstop gay anal, I guess. I mean, what is the thing that defines America? Because it sure as hell isn't a people. See, the problem isn't that people have grown to hate America. That doesn't even exist. The problem is white people were convinced to hate themselves. That sounds out there, say if somebody said, "Well, you just hate America." Well, you look at the opposite of it. You look at the people that run around and say, "God bless America." And if you ask them, name me exactly what God should bless America for, tell me. And you will more than likely get a stupid deer in the head like, look, because they can't answer that. Tell me exactly what is it that God's supposed to, God bless America. I tell you what, you just, God bless America. I love America. Okay. Well, God bless America for what? Let's have some specific. Here's a pen. Here's some paper. Write me a list. I suspect it's going to be a short list. Don't need a piece of paper. I have a napkin. And there's nothing going to be on it. It's an abstract concept. Does it mean anything? A nation is the people. You see this all through history. If you look in your Old Testament, it's the same thing. The nation was the people. White people decided to start hating themselves. And you sit here and say, well, the Jews. But the Jews are like 2% of the population. They don't have magical powers. The people became so decadent. The people became so decadent and so apathetic that they just became ready to listen to anything. They became more than ready. The self-hatred individually became self-hatred of their people in general. And you just saw this take off. I mean, seriously, let's be honest here. You took 2% of the population. They've convinced us. Well, what the hell is wrong then with the 98%? Of course, we're not 98%. I mean, but you understand the point. We got to be real here. Something got wrong in our people's general psyche. The self-hatred took root. They decided to start hating themselves as a people. That's the problem. Not hating America, because as a Christian believer, I don't know how you don't hate what is quote-unquote America today. Because we're instructed in our Bibles to hate evil, to hate evil, to hate that which is wicked. And again, what are you going to define America as? Nonstop gay anal. I mean, it's just every kind of sexual degeneracy, I suppose. I mean, there's nothing else that defines it. The rest of it is just some sort of multicultural hellhole. It keeps getting worse. Like we said earlier, we keep sending all of this quote-unquote blessing to Israel, but things keep getting worse. Something's wrong here. The people hate themselves. They hate their own race of people. And it's only white people that do this. You know, people get all upset when they they're a black supremacist. So this falls once again in the conservative mindset, you know, of you're not, I'm not, you're the real one, you know. Well, look at there, they're black supremacists. This black person just, they're the real racist. Everybody, the normal function of thing is you're supposed to love your own people. You're supposed to think your people are the best. It's not normal. You're the one that's not normal. The black person that thinks black people are the greatest thing ever, they're the normal ones. That's what you're supposed to do. There's nothing wrong with them. They're doing what's natural. They're following within the boundaries of the natural order. It's you, self-hating white people, that are the ones that aren't being normal. It is normal for everybody to think that their own people is the best in the world. That is what people do. That is what people who are mentally healthy do. They think their own people. It doesn't matter if your people are living in squad. That doesn't matter. You always think your own people are the best. Unless you're white people. Then you think your own people are the shittiest. Regardless of historical results of what your people have accomplished, you're convinced that your people are the shittiest. And why? What? It's just self-loathing. I think there's a lot of contributing factors, and it's easy to get into this mindset of oversimplifying it. Here's the problem. Well, it's actually a multitude of problems. You know, you get stronger through struggle, and this is a human nature thing. People get stronger through struggle. That's part of why life is set up the way it is. You look at through history and stuff, and when things get really, really comfortable, and we like that. I mean, nobody wants to struggle. I don't want to struggle. I want life on easy setting. Everybody does. But the thing is, as a people, you hit times of prosperity, hit times where things are easy and everything. You're getting your money for nothing and your chicks for free. And you always see this. You always seem to see a societal decline afterwards. You get this because then you get this prosperity and then people start getting apathetic, and then apathy seems to just lead to this self-hatred, this over-the-top decadence, and then you get this self-hatred that starts to set in this, and society start coming apart. Look at these things for what they are. I'm not under the illusions that this show can change the world. It's gonna save the West. It's gonna save our people. I don't have that kind of reach. But hopefully the people that are listening to this show will start separating themselves and recognize that self-hatred, freeing themselves from. I mean, in other words, you can do what you can do. You can reach those that you can reach, and you can, it's an ongoing thing to keep yourself going in that direction, because it's human nature to also follow the herd. And the herd, as defined as white people today, are running off the cliff of self-hatred. If you could eliminate all of the self-hatred among white people today, all of this could stop. It all comes down to white people have grown to hate themselves. If you could end that, and all of a sudden they would start looking out for their own interests. They wouldn't care. What? You got people running around. They're terrified of what? A hysterical mob on Twitter is going to call them names. And you're going to cower off and march off the cliff of destruction because people you don't even know are going to talk are going to call you names. That's self-hatred. If our people as a people weren't infected with self-hatred, they wouldn't give a shit. It's like, why would you care what somebody you don't even know is saying about you? Why would you care about that? Except you hate yourself. If you're confident in who you are, then that stuff means nothing. If as a people we could shed that, we'd turn this around really quick. Because all of a sudden, name calling and being accused of this-ism or that-ism wouldn't matter anymore. Got to break free of that. We try to get people broke free here. We try to stay broke free. This is where we have a congregation. We have a fellowship. Because it's easy. This is where the herd is going. It's easy to follow where everybody else is going. It's easy to slip into that and fall into that. And absolute truth of the matter is you can't control the group. You can control yourself. And then you get other people that are trying to get turned in the right direction. And then you create a fellowship. Now you have a little group. I mean, the herd's going over the cliff, but you got this little group that's not. This is how you affect change. Little by little. I don't have grandeur, delusions of grandeur that we're going to change the world with the show. This is not how it works. But hopefully we're changing the direction in our listeners' lives and in our own lives by focusing on not falling into these pitfalls that our people have fallen into. Now, you might have thought we're going to get through the show without talking about COVID, but we're not. It's like turning on the news. You turn on the news, I watch it on mute, and you just see the COVID pandemic. It's like you can't get through the news without hearing about COVID. You're not going to get through the show without hearing about COVID. You know, I was listening to a discussion, but see, this is an interesting covering of COVID. See, it's not the hysteria that's being promoted today. It's amazing. They think they can sell anything to the people, and I guess they can. I mean, they're lying in our faces. But I was listening to a discussion here the other day, and people were going back and forth, and they were talking about, you know, the different views. People say COVID is a hoax. It doesn't exist at all. It's a rebranding of the flu, or it's a real virus. It's not harmful. And then you got people that think that they believe everything the media tells them, that it's the deadliest virus ever known to man. And talking about all these opposing views, you know, and you got people and they're like, oh, well, you know. And I was thinking about when people say COVID is a hoax and, oh, well, you're denying this, you're denying that. I think it's important, again, I was thinking how this really could be compared to, say, the Holocaust. You're not allowed to compare anything to the Holocaust. But no, bear with me, because you get accused of being a Holocaust denier. And oh, my gosh, he's a Holocaust denier. But nobody, I always say I could make anybody a Holocaust denier. And give a conversation one-on-one with somebody, I can frame them as a Holocaust denier. Why? Because it all depends on how you define it. If you define the Holocaust as, you know, National Socialist Germany put Jews in camps, I don't know anybody that denies that. I mean, that is a historical fact. That is a not arguable fact. Did Jews die in the camp? Again, I don't think anybody denies that's real. I don't know anybody. I've been accused of being in some serious Holocaust denial circles, and I don't know anybody that believes that no Jews died in the camp. I don't think anybody believes it. But then you start walking down the road. You know, you want to hit the wall of eyes and make a right. Go down Lampshade Lane and another left to Bar of Soap Avenue. I mean, at some point, do you believe this? If you define the Holocaust as Jews were turned into lampshades and soap, do you believe that? Or do you not believe? They see these definitions matter. And I think you could compare that, reel that back in, because I think you could compare that to COVID. You says you're a COVID denier. You're a COVID denier. But how do you define COVID? Because you have this wide range of thing. It's either a rebranding of the flu and doesn't exist at all, or it's the deadliest virus ever. But how do you define it? Is it a thing? I personally think it's a thing that exists. I don't think it's it's just another strain. It's just a different form of a virus. Because, I mean, like, I don't know anybody that's died of COVID-19. But I do know people that have had it. And every one of them says they have the whole you can't taste or smell thing. That unique symptom that actually seems to be unique to it. They say that you can't taste anything when you try to eat. Your food tastes like you're eating paper. It's disgusting. They all say the same thing. They all have that same symptom. So, I mean, there's something there. It's just not this stupid, deadliest pandemic ever known to man nonsense that we can see as a lie on its face. So I think it falls into how you define it. How you define it. Then you got people, of course, that intentionally try to mislead you off on these trails, which is unsurprisingly, conservatives are usually at the front of the line doing that very thing. We're supposed to get off on, you know, is it the Chinese, the Wuhan, is the China virus? I cringe at that shit. I saw a comment posted here a while back, and I may have already mentioned this on the show. I'm getting old. I repeat myself. But I saw like what had to have been like the most boomer comment ever. No offense to our boomer our members of the congregation. They're boomers. We're talking, you know, just a broad sense here. This is about you. But I did. I saw the most boomer comment ever because somebody says this was a disease. Like they know. They know they've got the inside scoop, but they don't. They're just pulling it out of their ass. This was a deadly virus invented by them chinks to wipe out the older people. You see, it's all still about them. It's not only did the evil Chinese design this virus to let loose, they let it loose for the intent, sole purpose of wiping out the boomers. Because, you know, that's what's holding the country together. That's the only thing. It's got to be that. It's all, I don't even know. What do you say? I think there's a lot of overlap. I think there's a lot of overlap with those who think we need to send all of our money to Israel so God will bless us. And those who'll sit around and talk about them evil chinks, the Chinese. It's the Chinese taking us over. Yes, because we see all of the politicians at CHIPAC. The CHIPAC lobby is the most powerful lobby. It's just amazing to me. You see these randos commenting on the internet, and you can just picture them. I just picture them in my mind what they look like. And they're sitting there, and they're talking about how everybody in Washington is owned by the Chinese. But how? How do you have this mindset? I know that a certain amount are shills. I get it. But not all of them are shills. And these people are sitting here spouting off. The CHIPAC conference, where the Chinese have their big lobby group and everybody. The Anti-China Defamation League. It's the most powerful lobby. Get you booted off the internet, fired from your job. Pushing for hate crime laws about the Chinese. Do they not have any power of observation? Have any power of observation? I don't know how people can be so dull. You know, I get that most people don't do critical thinking, but some of this stuff is so in your face. We're not talking about a huge amount of critical thinking skills required here. Yeah, I was talking, I think I mentioned this on a previous show, but I saw in the news they were saying that this is a pandemic where the unvaccinated, because they've already started, remember when I told y'all they were going to do, many of us, I'm not the only one. I'm not, when I say I told y'all, I'm like, well, yeah, I told y'all, but I'm not the only one. I'm not claiming like I'm the lone voice in the wilderness. That's not what I'm saying. But remember when we told you that they're going to say, they're going to claim up there's a new deadly pandemic of this, you know, the variant. And they're really going to crank it up in the fall, but they're laying the groundwork now where they demonize people they've refused to take the vaccine. And they're really getting that ginned up already a little earlier. They're ahead of schedule. Anyway, and I see these people and they're talking on the news and they say, well, we just have this situation where the unvaxxed are infecting the vaccinated. They just spent like 10 minutes going on about how everybody needs to get vaccinated. They get the vaccine. You got to take the vaccine. And then they turn around and say, this is a horrible situation because the unvaxxed are infecting the vaccinated. Now, look, it doesn't require a lot of critical thinking skills to look at this and say, this is some kind of bullshit. You don't have to be a high-level critical thinker to look at 10 minutes of get the vaccine is going to keep you safe. And then have the very same people in the next breath tell you unvaccinated people are infecting the vaccinated. To know that you're being subjected to an extreme amount of bald face, in your face bullshit. I don't know. It's like people have gone numb to it. Just keep on rolling with it. I don't know. I don't know how it doesn't set lights off, little alarm bells in people's heads. They've gone to sleep. They've watched so many reality TV shows that they don't even know what reality is anymore. I don't know. It's something to see for sure. But don't worry, the Olympics are going on. We got the Olympics going on. Does anybody give a shit? I don't give a shit. I don't know anybody that gives a shit. You don't sit around and say, man, have you been watching the Olympics? Nobody has that conversation. Nobody cares. I have seen articles though, and I thought this was funny. It's like there's been several instances now where the U.S. team, the U.S. athletes lose to the Russian athletes, and they don't just like graceful about it. They're just like accuse them of using steroids. They're doping. You know, they shouldn't even be here. They shouldn't be allowed. We need sanctions. I think there was a story. I think it was a woman athlete in some bullshit competition that nobody cares about, and she lost to the Russian athlete. And she's like, well, the Russians aren't even supposed to be here. And I thought, isn't this just right? They should be banned. I lost the argument on the internet. And so those people need to be banned. You see this mindset? It is taken root. It's taken hold. If I lose, that person should be banned. She's sitting there bitching because she lost to the Russians. And they're like, well, the Russians are supposed to be banned from sanctions. They're not even supposed to be here. They're having to compete as the ROC, the Russian Olympic Committee. But they're actually representing Russia. And because of sanctions, they're not supposed to be here. It's not fair that I lost. You lost because you're butch dyke looking ass. You accuse other people. You got these American athletes that are like, oh, the Russians were doping. And you look at them and it's like, you living in a glass house. What rocks are you throwing? They're not even supposed to be here. They're supposed to be sanctions. That's the exact same mindset of they're not supposed to be on the internet arguing against me because I lost the argument. Ban them. This is expanded. If I can't win, it means they should be banned. I lost the argument, but it's not because I'm wrong. They're bad people. They should be banned. This is America today. Your Olympic athletes are making an embarrassment. I don't give a shit. And America is so retarded. They said here on the news, they're like, medal count. The medal count. Let's see how America's stacking up in the medal count. Who gives a shit? The medal count. Well, see, if America had the most gold medals, then they would be doing the gold medal count. But see, they don't. China's ahead in that. So it's overall medal count. That way, they could put the U.S. at the top. Put the U.S. at the top of the page. See, we got the most medals. Don't have the most golds, but who cares about that? We're the most medals. That makes us the winner. Meanwhile, it's an embarrassment on the global stage. You got these athletes that like, oh, they don't perform well. So they say, well, because of my mental health, I'm going home. The hell is that? Because of my mental health issues, I'm going home. Because I competed and I lost. Those Russians should be banned. You see, they shouldn't even be allowed to be here. It's not fair. I lost. Ban them. Kick them off. This is America. This is America. This is America on the global stage. I win, and if I don't win, you should be banned. It's amazing. We talk a lot about how this whole thing's coming apart, how the society is coming apart. It's observable reality. I don't know how people manage to be in denial. I always say, you look at the trajectory of things over just simply the last 10 years. Is this sustainable? Are we going to be, where are we going to be in 10 years from now? What's more likely, we're just going to keep this trajectory going and in 10 years be what? Or is this whole thing coming in on itself? And I'm not even talking, about this whole thing of they're doing this money to infinity debt thing. That, I'm not even talking about that. That's just one factor of it. Look at this society as a society falling apart. Yeah, we were talking earlier about this whole nonsensical thing that the Judeo-Christianites, they believe, we're talking about, the more we bless Israel, we're going to be blessed, but we're not seeing those results. Isn't it funny how that parallels with how we're told that diversity is our strength? It's really kind of the same thing, isn't it? I suspect it's from more or less the same source. If we just keep sending more money to Israel, then God's going to bless America. But we're looking at results, and that's obviously a false teaching. It's a false prophecy because it's a prophecy because they're saying, if we do enough for Israel, we're going to get this thing in return, but it's never happened. So it's a false prophecy. But you look at it, and it's the same thing. They keep telling us that diversity is our strength. Multiculturalism makes us better. It makes our societies more vibrant. It makes things better. Diversity, 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 diversity. And yet we're seeing what? I mean, we got plenty of diversity now. We should be seeing some results. And what are we seeing? I don't see how anybody can look at our society today, if you can even call it a society, and claim that diversity is making it better. Well, we just need to do more of it. Can you imagine this? It's like if you kept pouring gas on a fire and the fire kept getting bigger and you looked at the person next to you and you said, well, you keep telling me if I pour more gas, the fire is going to go away, but it seems to be getting bigger. And the person next to you says, we're just not pouring enough gas. Would you not be like, I think something's wrong here. I think they may be misguided. I think they may be lying to me. They keep telling us diversity is our strength. Diversity is what makes everything good. Diversity is what makes us the best place in the world. But the more diversity we're getting, the shittier things are becoming. Based on results. What are the results here? And they've told so many lies. I think about the lies they've told in Europe. They said, well, to address declining demographics, we're going to import these people. Not just any people. We're going to import the people with the lowest IQ, the highest level of violence. We're going to import them from the third world. It's going to make everything good. That's how you address your demographics. See, we're just fixing the demographics. Never mind that. Look, shrinking demographics, these things go in cycles historically. Now, if you were to maintain your country, now you take Japan, for instance, they have shrinking demographics. They have a very aging population. However, why did they have that? Because they work obscene hours and they can't afford to own a house or they can't afford to start a family. And so as a result, the demographics are shrinking. The people are aging. People aren't having enough children to replace the population they have. Now, if you kept Japan as Japanese, then that's going to work out because, see, the aging population is going to die off. And when they die off, what are you going to have? You're going to have all of these empty houses and somebody's got to buy them, right? Somebody's got to buy them. And the prices of those houses, the prices of cost of living is going to go down. Again, if you keep the homogenous population, those jobs are going to have to start treating their employees better to keep them because this other guy's got all this competition over labor, which is always what they try to fight off. They always want to keep that from happening. It doesn't matter where it is. This is the thing that's inherent in capitalism. They always want to keep the cost of labor suppressed. But if you didn't have that, these corporations, these companies in Japan would be fighting one another for employees because there's a shortage of employees. So they got to pay better. They got to offer shorter hours. They got to quit working. And the Japanese salary man meme where they work people to death. They got to quit doing that. They've got to offer incentives. They got to offer more pay. They got to offer all of this. And the standard of living comes up and the price of housing going cheaper. And guess what? Now people can afford to get married and they can even afford to work a single income household and the wife can stay home and raise their three little Japanese kids. And since women are now not in the workforce, that drives the price of labor up even higher. You ever notice they always have a problem? The only time they have a problem with quote unquote free market is when it means the price of labor goes up. See, as long as it means the price of labor goes down, you're living in squalor. They say, hey, that's just the free market. You just got to learn to just buck it up. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. What do you want? Some kind of welfare? Same narrative worldwide, by the way. But whenever anything could happen that the price of labor could go up, all of a sudden we need immigration. We need more women in the workforce. We need more. And it's all about keeping the cost of labor down. But if you, going back to our illustration, the demographics would correct themselves because now people can afford to have families and all this. But they tell us what? In Europe, they said, you got to fix the demographics there. Look, we imported Africa. We imported the Middle East. Now, our demographics went up. We fixed the magic numbers on a piece of paper. Imagine the insulting nature that you don't think any more of your people, that they're just numbers on a paper. And they run this out there and nobody's offended. Nobody's offended. The population of our country or the population of Sweden, they're just numbers on a paper. There's nothing unique about them as a people. Just numbers on a paper. Look, we imported Africa. Now our numbers on the paper went up. It's fixed. In Hungary, they have resisted this and they've enacted government policies to give incentives to where people can afford to get married and have kids. And they give them better breaks and even help towards getting a house and cars and things such as this. And voila, it magically fixed itself. I remember seeing a report on this. You know, of course, they were sneering in the report and implying that it was racist because they're not importing the third world. And they're never competing. They talk about this globalism, but it's anti-white hatred. It's always the anti, always comes back to the anti-white race hate agenda because they say, well, it's globalism. But if it was nothing more than globalism, then these countries in Europe would be, say, fighting for workers from other countries from Europe. You know, if they were importing people, it's like, man, our demographics in Germany are shit. You know what? Let's offer incentives and bring the people from Sweden, the white people from Sweden into Germany. We'll fix our demographics. We'll bring Swedes into Germany. Notice that's never the solution. It's always the same solution. We're going to import Africa. We're going to import the third world. They never tried it. They didn't want to import any white South Africans, did they? They want to import the third world. They cover all of this up as well. We're just working on demographics where it's a globalism, blah, blah, blah. But it always comes back to the anti-white race hate agenda. They're not fighting to get white people from other white countries to come into their country and raise the standard of living and fix their, quote unquote, fix their demographics. That's never the answer. They want to import the third world. And once again, where are the results? We're getting more diversity. They keep telling us it's making us stronger, but things are getting worse. They're getting worse because it's a false prophecy, because it's all a lie. We got to wrap up and get into our Christian specific segment, the sermon this week here at the Parish of the Patriots. So yeah, you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's dive off in to this week's Christian specific segment here at the Parish of the Patriots. So as you get settled in this week, before we get started, I just, you know, we do this because I really honestly believe there's a big culling going on. There's a sifting in the church amongst the believers. We have all of these people out here and they would claim, you know, to be Christian believers, but they follow all these false doctrines. They follow all this heresy and all of this turmoil and this stuff that we're going through as a society, as a people. This is making for a great sifting. There's going to be a lot of people that are going to be culled out as far as being able to call themselves Christian believers. Now, I mean, you can look at the most ridiculous examples of the MCC, you know, where we've got, what, lesbian bishops performing gay marriage and all of this other nonsense, and they tuck their crosses down because they don't want to offend anybody. They're just a ridiculous caricature, and that's easy to spot. But you have a lot of people that are just, you know, they're all following all of these weird, not based in truth teachings. They're following the things of the world that have been marketed, and everything we just, I say this all the time, but we are all, from the coronavirus hoax to all of the rest of this, we're constantly being presented with marketing, even when we don't realize. I mean, think about the Delta variant. We're being sold the Delta variant. Well, do you think they just came up with the Delta variant out of the blue? No, they did marketing research on it. What sounds the most ominous? And Delta variant won out. So we're being marketed the Delta variant. If another term would have made it sound more sinister and ominous, they would have used that. But their marketing research said Delta variant, so that's what we're being sold. Well, a lot of Christianity is chasing after marketing as well. They've been marketed these different ideas, and they think that it's Christianity, but it's not. And what we're trying to do, one of the things we try to accomplish here as a fellowship of believers, is to not fall off into that, not to fall off and go chasing after these lies, these repackaged things, because you wind up with all these people and they're really, you look at it and they say, oh, I'm a Christian believer. Okay. And we're going to get into this as we go through our Bible reading today. But they say, oh, I'm a Christian believer. Okay. Well, what are y'all doing? What do you believe in? And when they start hashing it out, well, it's the same thing that the world believes in, which is impossible as a Christian believer. So they're basically chasing after the things of the world, promoting the things of the world, but it's been repackaged and marketed as Christianity. This is something we want to stay away from, something we want to not fall into. This is a great culling, a great sifting. You have all these multitudes of people that think that they're saved, that think they're Christian believers, but in their hearts, they've chased after the things of the world. It's not any wonder why Christ says at that time, I'll say, get away from me. I know you not. And I don't know anything about you. Your heart was never close to me. And this is when it's easy to get pulled into. They do a good job marketing. They've had decades of experience at this. So it's easy to get sucked into. Which one of the things we try to do here is to guard against that. So with that having been said, we're going to do James chapter 4, 1 through 8 this week. Instead of just reading the whole thing and then kind of talking about it, I think we'll just kind of read and stop. And that's kind of be how we're going to do this whole segment. We'll see how it works. It may be horrible. Y'all maybe you end up like, what's he doing? Don't ever do that again. But that's how we're going to do it. And I think it'll mean something. As we go through these things, you always have to remember, for starters, we're used to the King James Version. But so many of the way they used the words back then aren't the way we use them now. And you have to realize and always remember that none of this stuff was originally written in English. So, there's words. If you've looked into foreign languages at all, you'll quickly discover that there are certain words that will not translate. There are certain words that don't translate from one language to another language. So when people are translating that, say, if you're an interpreter, they have to kind of cobble something together to get as close as they can. So it just stands to reason that, knowing that our Bibles were never written, these things were never written originally in English, they had to be translated. Well, certain words wouldn't exactly translate, so they had to be just kind of as close as you can get. And I think we'll see an example of that as we go through James chapter 4, verses 1 through 8 this week. But it's always something you want to keep in mind, because this is where literalists get all tripped up. They'll say, oh, we have to believe every word of the Bible is literal interpretation, otherwise you can't believe any of it. But that's nonsensical, because none of this was ever written in English. So you have to realize that when some words can't exactly be translated, you're going to have to try to just look at everything around it and put it together and get its overall meaning. And that way you don't get all tripped up. And that's what I have to do. I think that trips up a lot of believers and gets them all messed up because they don't understand things appear to be contradictions, but they're not. I think often it is just simply, as the saying goes, lost in translation. So let's go ahead and start here from verse 1. From whence come wars and fightings among you? Come they not hence, even of your lusts that war in your member? Now, here's a classic example. He used the term lusts here. And what do we automatically think? Well, we think of sexual lust, because everything in our society is centered around sex these days. But that's not what he's talking about. I mean, you don't go to fighting and bickering among one another and backbiting and backstabbing and having all of this conflict among other people because of sexual lust. I mean, that can be a reason. But as we go through this, we'll quickly discover that's not what he's talking about here. He's talking about a different kind of lust. So let's go ahead with verse 2. Ye lust, and ye have not. Ye kill, and ye desire to have, and cannot obtain. Ye fight and war, yet ye have not, because ye ask not. Ye ask and receive not, because ye ask amiss, that ye may consume it upon your lusts. Now, obviously, who's he saying you're supposed to be asking for? Well, he's talking about asking in prayer, asking of the Lord. Well, if by lust he was referring to things of a sexual nature, that wouldn't make sense on his face, now would it? You need to be asking the Lord, you know, to to get that booty call. Well, obviously, that is not correct. So what's he talking about? Things you desire. So when does things cross over that line into your lusting after things? If you think about when you were a kid. I remember when I was a kid one time, and I was down, you know, we had all these little businesses back then. You didn't have Walmart, thank goodness. It was a better time. But anyway, I was down at the Ben Franklin store. There was a Ben Franklin store. And I was at the Ben Franklin store, and I seen this skateboard sitting there. And I wanted that thing so bad. I thought about it day and night. I went home and thought about it day and night. Thought about all the things I could be doing on that skateboard. Never mind, I didn't have a single damn place to ride a skateboard. Didn't have anything. Any big area. You know, now these kids, they got these, you know, areas just dedicated to skateboard. We didn't have none of that back then. You're lucky if you had a sidewalk to skateboard. Now they go down to the park and they got these ramp things and all this crazy stuff so you can break your arm faster. We didn't have none of that. You're lucky if you had if you found a place, like there was a 20-foot sidewalk, man, that was like a skate park. It's like a skate park for you. And say, it didn't make any sense. Didn't even have anywhere to ride a skateboard. Didn't even cross my mind. And if it didn't cross my mind, I just dismissed it because it didn't matter. I wanted that skateboard. I wanted the skateboard to the point that it didn't matter. I didn't even have anywhere to ride it. It didn't even make any sense. Where the hell are you going to ride a skateboard? In the dirt? It ain't going to roll in the dirt. But it didn't matter. So because it's all you can think about. Consumed about it, where nothing, logic doesn't even apply. See, that is a lusting after things. That is what he's talking about. Covetousness is another term that might would be closer, but as you see, it doesn't exactly apply either, because covetousness implies that you want to, you know, take it from somebody else. This lusting, you know, like the skateboard, it belonged to the store. It was for sale. I just couldn't afford it. But is when something consumes you, the desire for something consumes you to the point where reason and logic really don't even apply. He says, you don't receive it because you don't ask for it. But see, you don't ask for it properly because you're just wanting to consume. You just want it because you want it. You don't want it because it makes any damn sense. You ain't got nowhere to ride the skateboard. You just want it because you want it. If somebody asked you, man, why do you want that new car so bad? The car you got's all right. They can't even tell you why. I want new car smell. I love that smell of a new car. Well, who doesn't? But you can't afford to go into debt for new car smell. It don't even make any sense. It's a difference. Consumed by it. Consumed by that desire. You see, that's when it crosses that line. It's fine to ask for something. That's what he's saying here. You don't receive it because you don't ask for it. You don't ask for it properly. It's fine to desire certain things. The problem comes when it crosses that line to where reason and logic don't apply. It doesn't matter. You remortgage your house to get it because you just want it so bad, but you don't really actually need it. You just want it really, really bad. And again, it's not like you have to live. I'm not telling you to be a good Christian. You have to live a meager, destitute lifestyle. It's not what I'm saying, but you've got to keep things in their proper perspective. You've got to humble your heart. And we're going to get into that as we go. Let's pick up at verse 4. And I stopped at verse 3 because I knew we're separating the lusts he's talking about here with those of a sexual nature. Because like I say, everything in this society turns everything into things of a sexual nature. And I wanted to stop at verse 3 because if we go into verse 4, if we didn't clarify, then you're going to get confused. So we pick up at verse 4. Ye adulterers and adulteresses. I'm going to stop here. He's not talking about literal adultery here. And we'll see this as we go. Ye adulterers and adulteresses, know ye not that the friendship of the world is enmity with God? Whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is an enemy of God. Now he says adulterers and adulteresses. He's not talking about, you know, running around cheating on your spouse. He's talking about adultery against God. If you're chasing after the world, You see, when you get consumed with these desires, these lusts for the things of this world, when you do the things, worldly things, you're committing adultery against God because your heart has moved. You see, again, logic and reason no longer apply. All you can think about is the things of the world. Well, if your heart is set upon the things of this world, they're not set upon the things of God, right? And it says that friendship with the world is basically hatred towards God. It doesn't mean you got to be miserable in this life. I hate this world. I hate this life so bad. That means I love God more. That's not what it means. It means if you are chasing after the world, if you're seeking approval of the world, if the world is your number one desire and things, always remember, God knows what you need and he even knows what you want. But you cannot go chasing after those things where your heart belongs. Do ye think that the scripture saith in vain that the spirit that dwelleth in us lusteth to envy? Now here he's saying that, look, this is something you've got to be on your guard about. And it's also, I think, a reassuring line, because he's saying, look, there's nothing wrong with you. The scripture saith, do you think the scripture saith in vain? Do you think it says without reason, the spirit that dwelleth in us lusteth to envy? He's saying it's a normal thing. You got to be on your guard against it. It's one of the pitfalls. But he giveth more grace. Wherefore he saith, God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace unto the humble. See, God will help you out with this. And God might even help you to get some nice things, to achieve certain things. But you got to humble your heart about it. You've got to get into a position to where, well, you know, if I get that, if that comes about, that's great. If not, then so be it. You know, God's will be done. This is what he's talking about, humbling. Again, too often in translation, modern people will sit here and define humble, humility, to mean I'm a doormat and I'm just going to let everybody walk over me. These words have been twisted even in the English language. Then you factor in, you know, things that get lost in translation, but then you factor in that even regular English words now the meanings are being twisted. So many Christians today think, and they read humble, when they read about humility, they think that means you're a doormat and you let everybody run all over you. That's not what he's talking about. It's about humbling your heart, putting those things in their proper place, and putting God first. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. You see, when you just get so centered and focused, and that's all you think about is these desires, these things, this chasing after the things of the world, they become consuming. They get to where they just, that's all you can do. That's all you can think about. But he's saying here, look, you get your mind right, you get your spirit right, where you're not focused on these things, where they're not consuming you. You start drawing nearer to God. You will be drawing nearer to God by the fact that you're starting to push those things away. You're starting to put those things in your proper place. And guess what? All that all-consuming nature of whatever it is you're dealing with, all of a sudden, it loses power over you. The devil will flee from you. The more you stay engaged with it, the more you struggle with it, the more the devil gets a hold on you, is basically what he's saying. More these things get a hold on you. You got to get them in the proper place. Quit letting them have power over you. Draw near to God, and the devil will flee from you. Let's go ahead and finish up with verse 8. Draw nigh to God, and he will draw nigh to you. Cleanse your hands, ye sinners, and purify your hearts, ye double-minded. And again, this just pretty much reaffirms what we've already said. Get closer to God. Start putting things in your mind in their proper place, and he'll draw close to you. Again, the Lord is not abandoning you. You've got to draw close to him. He'll draw close to you. And in this, I think the best advice is, you know, to always remember that as long as you're seeking God, you're trying to look in the right direction, regardless of where you're at on the scale of success. Always remember that you don't love God more than he loves you. And you are not more determined to get close to him as he is to you, to bring you in. It is literally impossible for you to be in a position to where you want to be close to God, you want to know God, you want to follow God, but I'm sorry, it's just, you, that well is run dry. God's not going to have anything else to do with you anymore, because no matter how much you want to be close to him, no matter how much you want to follow him, regardless of your sins or where you've been in the past, it's too late. It's too late. God is sick of you. It's not the case. You do not love God more than he loves you. You can't understand. You can't comprehend the difference. It's so stark. You do not desire to be draw nearer to him than he desires to draw you unto himself. So the idea that, you're going to wind up in a position to where you're trying to get closer to God, but you've just messed up too much. It's impossible now. You got to draw closer to God. He'll draw closer to you. May not seem like it at the time. It may take a while, but as long as you don't give up, even if it seems like you're stuck in a rut, as long as you seem like you're stuck in place and you keep trying, but you just don't get anywhere. It's like a vehicle stuck in the mud. You've been stuck in the mud before and you're trying to get it out and you have to do that rocking thing, you know, and you're like, trying to back up and doesn't go anywhere. Then you try to move forward, doesn't go anywhere. And then you just start kind of backing up and then going forward, backing up and going forward, trying to get a rocking motion to where you can push your way out. Of course, sometimes that doesn't work and you're actually just digging a deeper ditch until you've got the vehicle stuck on the frame. But the fact of the matter is, as long as you keep at it, at some point you're going to get it unstuck. You're not going to like go somewhere and there's a vehicle stuck in the mud that was stuck there 30 years ago and no one got it out. Might have to call a wrecker, might have to show up and drag you out. Might have to get a friend that can get a chain and pull you out. But you're going to get it out. Unless you just gave up. If you gave up, walked away and said, but that's it. It's never coming out, and you just walked away from the vehicle, then yeah, it's going to stay stuck there. It's probably not the best, illustration, but the point is, as long as you keep at it, no matter if you feel stuck, as long as you're trying to get closer to God, he's not gave up on you. You are the only one capable of giving up in this thing. Now, he's not going chasing after you either. And that's one of the things, the false teachings, I think, that are kind of insinuated, if not outright promoted in the church today, in the MCC, is that, like, you're out here doing whatever the hell, and God is out here running around trying to cater to your needs. God's running around trying to beg you to come. Hey, please come unto me. Beg. That God is chasing after every asshole in the world that's running around living every kind of sinful lifestyle. God is out there running around. God is down there at the gay orgy, like begging him, please, Jesus is like, please come to me. Please quit doing gay orgies and come to me. He is not out begging anybody. You got your own free will. But as long as you're trying to get to him, he's not chasing you. If you want to go off and do the world thing, that's on you and the consequences of it as well. But he is there. As long as you're trying to get to him, no matter where you're at now, as long as you are trying to get to him, you are trying to get the ship turned and pointed towards the Lord, he's there. He's not off wandering around. You're not going to get there. It's like, well, I think the Lord is right here. And you turn your ship and you head to where you think the Lord is. But he's gone because he's off chasing people all over the world, begging them to come to him. That's not how it works. He's there. He's rock solid. He's in the same place he's always been. You just got to try to get from there to there. But as long as you're trying to get there, he's not gave up on you. He's not gave up on you. You know, we talk about these things. And I do. I really love this. I don't know, this congregation, if you were, that we congregate on the internet. I really love these discussions we have. And I'll be honest. I mean, some of the stuff I sit here afterwards and I think about it, and I'm not under the illusions. I have no delusions of grandeur at all. I mean, we talk about these things like today. We've talked about this. And as we wrap up, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, this is nothing grand. But this seems like, pretty common sense sort of stuff. And I sometimes think some of the things we talk about here, I think it's too simplistic. It's too obvious. Maybe I'm not doing a very good job with it because this is obvious stuff. But then you listen to what's being promoted as quote unquote Christianity today, and it's so far removed from common sense. God doesn't make this hard. God is like the embodiment of common sense. Why do things make common sense? Because it falls within the natural order. Who made the natural order? God. the natural orders, the rules that things keep in balance in this world that God made. It's like an automated system. Common sense, it makes sense to us because it falls within the parameters of the natural order, so that's probably how it works. Common sense. God is like the embodiment of common sense. And yet you look at many of the teachings as what's being taught as Christianity today, and it falls outside of the band. It makes no common sense. I look at this stuff. If you hear, read, or listen to any of this stuff, and it's so nonsensical and it's so childish, some of this stuff that they promote is as modern Christianity. I don't claim that we're covering profound topics here. We're covering stuff that's pretty much common sense. But sadly, common sense is yet another thing that's been abandoned by the modern church. Anyway, we're going to wrap up on that note. Hopefully, once again, you got something out of the whole show, the whole package this week. Hope you did. As always, I enjoy sitting down and visiting with y'all. And once again, thank you, all of those of you who aren't shy. Pay your tithes. It is very much appreciated. Leave you me. So, yeah, we're going to back out of here. Don't forget, catch me on Fridays with Sir Longshanks for the Friday installment of the Daily Nationalist. Always a fun discussion. And you'll, of course, be able to catch us here next week, right here on a Radio Albion for the Parish of the Patriots.